Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. I'm Mike Pratt, and I'm joined today by the wonderful Cray Bolger.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Cray. Today, we're going to be discussing this paper titled Emergency Physician Performed Tricuspid Annular Plane Systolic Excursion in the Evaluation of Suspected Pulmonary Embolism. This was published in the American Journal of Emergency Medicine, January of 2017. So we're talking about the old TAPSE. And for those of you not familiar with this, that is a measurement of right heart systolic function. And it has been used in lots of different things in echocardiography historically, but more recently in the point of care sector, we've been talking about using it for pulmonary embolism. The thought being that if you have a big pulmonary embolism, you're going to show signs of right heart strain. And one of those signs is a bad TAPSE. So what the TAPSE is, just to discuss it briefly before we go into this paper on it, is you're taking a look at that annulus of the tricuspid valve. Usually you're going to measure this with M mode laterally. You put the M mode cursor through that one spot and see how that moves. It should move kind of towards and away from your probe, towards the apex of the heart and away from the apex. And the distance that that moves is what we're actually measuring here.
Mike, I think an important point here is to make sure that before you do any measurements, but especially things like TAPSE, that you actually have a good image. A lot of times when I see mismeasured TAPSE, it's that we don't have a true apical four. They're in more of a subxiphoid view. We don't see both valves open. So to have a good TAPSE measurement, you have to have a good apical four image, which includes seeing both the tricuspid and mitral valve, all four chambers, and the septum being perpendicular to the plane of view.
Definitely there is some controversy over whether this is useful or not. Some people say maybe this is a little bit too extreme. Is it going to actually change your management? And I think although that's up for debate, it would be useful in knowing whether or not your patient is exhibiting signs of right heart strain. Now, the question is whether this is enough to diagnose a pulmonary embolism. That's what this article is actually attempting to tackle. So they want to see how accurate is a abnormal TAPSE at diagnosing a pulmonary embolism. And then their secondary questions were, what's the inter-rater reliability among emergency physicians? Is this feasible to do? And how well does it perform compared to other measurements of right heart strain on echo? So those were their questions for this paper. How good is the TAPSE in diagnosing, and how does it work alongside the other right heart strain factors? So Cray, what did they do?
This was a prospective observational convenience sample, the best kind of evidence there is. And what they did is performed a bedside ultrasound, and ideally they did this before they had the results of the CTPE study. They had tried to have two investigators present, and both of them would measure TAPSE so that they could look at inter-rater reliability. So in some patients, they did try to do kind of an eyeball gestalt of the TAPSE prior to doing a measurement to see how good that was in comparison to the absolute measurements, because sometimes time sensitivity, et cetera, that might be what you have to go by. So they had three fellowship-trained emergency practitioners. I think that's important because this is not your basic run-of-the-mill echo. This is not what's included necessarily in the initial scope of practice from ASEP. This is kind of that advanced guidelines that just came out recently where hemodynamic monitoring, I think this gets lumped into that set of measurements.
But they also had a medical student who had not really had any prior training.
Yes, and a resident and four fellows. So they had quite an array of practitioners, but they were a little light on the novice side.
Sure.
So the medical student got a whopping 2 weeks of training in POCUS and performed 50 focused exams, so the exam that they are performing at the bedside currently. So they had 1 hour didactic session to standardize training amongst all their users, and they had to have at least done 20 TAPSE measurements. So even though this was a med student, this was not necessarily a novice group, as I think if you polled general emergency practitioners, I don't think they would be able to say they'd done 20 TAPSE measurements in their careers. So they did what they call a focus scan. They looked for RV enlargement, septal flattening, tricuspid regurge, McConnell sign, and a TAPSE less than 1.7. So the results, Mike.
All right, so here is what they found. They ended up enrolling 150 subjects. And when they looked at the patient population here, thinking about things that could potentially change your results as far as other causes of right heart strain, there were 7 that were ultimately diagnosed with COPD, interstitial lung disease, or pulmonary hypertension. That's about 5% of their population. Of the population that had pulmonary embolism, that was 21.3% of their group, and only 2 patients, or 1.4%, had a massive pulmonary embolism. They ended up excluding 3 patients because they could not get echo windows or a TAPSE, which I think is important to include. See, always when you're reading ultrasound papers, see how many patients got excluded because they couldn't get the windows or couldn't get the images, because that may decrease the feasibility of this in some populations. So they originally set their TAPSE bar at 1.7 centimeters. Using that as the cutoff, their TAPSE had a 56% sensitivity and a 79% specificity, leading to likelihood ratios of 2.6 and 0.56. Not that great. Then they analyzed their data and said, where's the best point that we could make the TAPSE cutoff? And they ended up settling at 2 centimeters. 2 centimeters, now 72% sensitive and 66% specific. And the area under the curve was better for the 2 centimeter cutoff as well. So when they compared this to other measurements of right heart strain, the TAPSE cutoff of 2 centimeters was more sensitive than any other measurement of right heart strain. Looking at those other measurements, there was a lot that were more specific. McConnell's sign was the most specific, 97% sensitive, and septal flattening was 94% specific, although those had very poor sensitivities. When they looked at the injury rater reliability on the 30 subjects that they had 2 providers perform TAPSEs on, that was 0.97, which is great. When they looked to see how well the eyeball or qualitative estimate of TAPSE correlated with the actual measurements, that ended up being 0.94, also encouraging. Now, because they got such poor test characteristics for TAPSE in diagnosing pulmonary embolism, they ended up doing a post hoc analysis on only the hypotensive or tachycardic patients. They only had 17 of those patients in this study, but in this population, the sensitivity improved to 94%, and having any signs of right heart strain was 100% sensitive for a pulmonary embolism in this population. Now, Carrie, remember how we were talking about that medical student?
Yes.
To see how well a fairly novice practitioner could do this?
That not novice medical student?
Yes. The medical student that had 2 weeks of training and lots of TAPSEs. Well, in any case, he had a correlation, she had a correlation with the other investigators of 0.97. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I like that because that helps me shoot down these people who say, I can't do this. It doesn't take that much time, right? 2 weeks, 20 TAPSEs, you can do this. It's putting a line through a moving target.
And I think that was one of the points of this paper, to show that it is feasible to evaluate TAPSE by point of care ultrasound. Let's discuss some limitations. This is a convenience sample, so they're only enrolling patients when people are available or when they show up during certain hours. You're going to miss some patients. You're not getting the full spectrum of the population. The majority of the providers had a pretty good experience level. We're talking about 3 fellowship trained practitioners, 4 fellows, and then just 1 resident and 1 medical student. So pretty good level of experience with this.
Plus focus training on the specific exam.
Exactly. So these were not people they pulled off the street and asked to do TAPSE. These were some...
Yeah. I think that's important too, because they're also not getting pulled out of their shift and being asked to do a TAPSE, right? So they're going in with a focus question and a little bit of diagnostic bias prior to scanning. So they're looking at this tricuspid very specifically, rather than your undifferentiated chest pain, your undifferentiated dyspneic patient, where you're looking at that, B-lines, the IVC, the cardiac contractility.
Right.
You have a lot more questions. In this case, they went in with one specific question they were trying to answer. I don't know if that necessarily changes anything, but I think it changes the focus of the practitioner, which, as we always say, it's operator dependent. And if your operator's focused on this question, they might be getting the answer they want.
That's a great point of bias. Now, Cray, what do you feel about TAPSE for diagnosing pulmonary embolism in general?
I think it's a piece of the puzzle. I don't think it's the whole puzzle being answered. Especially in our patient population at a tertiary care center, they're complex. They have longstanding COPD, pulmonary hypertension, cardiac disease. And so these patients aren't straightforward. These are ones where the TAPSE is probably abnormal in a good percentage of our patient population at baseline. And so that can't be used alone in isolation. I think, you know, as shown here, you have to bring in these other findings. One thing I think that's important to notice that they didn't mention is right ventricular wall thickness. You know, to differentiate from acute versus chronic right heart strain, you really need to look at that right ventricular wall. And so TAPSE can't be used kind of in isolation without that in your complex medical population.
And the other point of this is that you might miss some of those non-submassive pulmonary emboli. And I know it's debatable in this era of increased CT use whether or not we care about these really small subsegmental pulmonary emboli. But I think at the end of the day, nobody wants to miss a pulmonary embolism if it's going to cause some significant morbidity or mortality in your patient. And I'd be concerned that if you're only looking for patients that have developed right heart strain, you might miss some of the smaller pulmonary emboli that could potentially still affect the patient or be the etiology of their symptoms.
So say you have a patient with a creatinine of 3, a TAPSE of 2, and an enlarged RV. Do you empirically treat that PE if they can't be scanned?
I agree with your previous point that you have to put it all in the context. So we know that even though the TAPSE doesn't have a great specificity, it's reasonably specific, so that if you have a high enough pretest probability and now you see this bad TAPSE, I think that I would consider empirically treating it if I don't have anything else that I am considering or worried about and the risk-benefit ratio is reasonable for that patient.
I agree. I think if there's no effusion, I don't see anything abnormal in the chest x-ray and my pulmonary ultrasound, I think that these findings are probably suggestive enough. I think, you know, one point that was made at a recent conference was we can't hold ultrasound to higher testing characteristics than we do any other test. And I think this is in the realm of our other imaging modalities. So I think, you know, in the right, again, correlating clinically, right clinical context, that I would use this to initiate therapy.
Great. So let me just recap this study. This was a study of prospectively enrolled patients that were getting a CT angiogram or a CT pulmonary embolism study. They looked at the focused echo signs of right heart strain, and they were trying to determine whether TAPSE was able to diagnose a pulmonary embolism. They ended up finding that a TAPSE of 1.7 did not perform well, but a TAPSE of 2 had better test characteristics with a 72% sensitivity and 66% specificity. The take-home points that I took from this is that it is feasible to perform TAPSE in the emergency department or as a point-of-care ultrasound, and it may be more sensitive than other signs of right heart strain, but at the end of the day, it doesn't have good enough test characteristics that you can really rely on. I thank the authors for performing the study, and I thank you for continuing to listen. Visit our website at ultrasoundgel.org, email us, sign up for our mailing list, visit us on iTunes and give us a great review, or contact us through Twitter or email. We're happy to talk to you.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel,
more ultrasound gel podcast.